Muddy Knees Media.
This news just in, listeners. The Athletic is extending its £1 a month offer for all new subscribers, meaning you can get unrivaled analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, plus a brand new breaking news service and ad-free versions of all of The Athletic's podcasts for just a quid. This deal won't last forever, though, so don't miss out. Sign up today at theathletic.com/totally.
Totally Football Show. Today, internationals and more. England, Keegan in the can, anniversary klaxon. Plus, why aren't the Three Lions world champions yet? Forest fired. Sabri Lamouchi getting the booting, replaced by Chris Hooton. Transfer thoughts and whether Theo Walcott's Saints is like moving back in with your folks when your relationship ends. Plus, all the Nations League and European Championship playoff news you can shake a vaguely interested stick at. It's the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Listener, hello to you on this Thursday, the 8th of October. Excited to say that we've got a Daniel Story, James Horncastle and Dion Fanning joint for you today. Hello, everybody.
Morning, James.
Morning. Hey, James. An afternoon listener, because, you know, it'll take a while for Charlie to get this into up to code.
Dig there. A dig at Charlie.
No. A dig at us, if anything. listeners, of course, this is recorded live without hitches. But, you know, technology requires that the whole thing's, you know, polished up a little bit. Dion, by the way, so glad you could join us again. About a year on, is that right? Was it a year ago you joined us?
Time flies so fast when you're in lockdown.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it must be a year ago. Yeah, it must have been, I can't remember what exactly, but there was some Ireland news I think we needed to respond to.
Funnily enough, there'll be Ireland news today. There's loads to talk about. Big European fixtures, some exciting England content, of course. Also, we'll probably touch again. I know there's been one question in about the whole notion of sending players from different teams and different leagues to different countries and getting them to all mix together and see what could possibly emerge from that, the wisdom thereof. But Daniel, let's begin, though, with a quick reaction from you to Tuesday's news bombshell at the City Ground, with Sabri Lamouchi sacked by Forest and replaced now by Chris Hooton.
Yeah, I mean, the sacking was inevitable given the run. I was an advocate of him leaving in the summer, which might have seemed slightly harsh, but I think the shortened nature of pre-season decreed that the likely hangover from that collapse last season was probably going to continue into this season. And instead, we've let him sign 12 or 13 new players and then done it four games into the season. I mean, Chris Hughton is an excellent manager. His last four finishes in the Championship are first, second, third and fourth. And he feels like a very sensible approach from a club that isn't particularly attracted to making sensible decisions normally. But his strengths have come with a pretty small squad and a club right, where everything's pointing in the right direction. And that's pretty much the opposite of what Forest are now. I hope that Hughton can drag us up quicker than we can drag him down. But I've said that about managers before.
So your squad is what, about 40 strong and assembled by a collection of... How many managers have put that squad together, would you say?
Well, 2010 was the last year that we didn't change a manager. So that kind of gives you an indication of how many have come and gone in the interim. Lamouchi actually stayed for longer than most, but yeah, he only just completed a full season in charge. So we've signed 66 players, I think, since June 2017. So that gives you a kind of indication of where the squad's at.
Right. Is it the most difficult job in the Football League right now, Daniel?
It is outside of those very obvious crisis clubs, you know, like Bolton and Wigan, I think. Just in terms of the expectation versus the patience versus the management of an incredibly large group of players, as we've said, signed by various different managers. And yeah, he has to come in now and basically build a squad out of other people's parts, which is not an easy thing to do.
Forest after their worst start to a season for 66 years. Hughton has previously taken Newcastle up and more recently Brighton. And the last Brighton manager that Forest appointed was who?
Yeah, Brian Clough. I think it would be tenuous to make a link between the two on that evidence, but I'll take anything.
Go on, Daniel. Come on.
All right. Well, fingers crossed for Chris Hooton, one of the nice guys, with a bit of work on his plate. That was Tuesday's big news. Monday, of course, saw one or two headlines as well as the transfer window closed, sort of, because it's still open in the Football League. And am I right, transfers to and from the Football League to the Premier League? Yes. Now, we talked in Tuesday's show about a couple of the last-minute deals. Thomas Partey to Arsenal, which we liked, and Edinson Cavani to Man United, which not so much. But later on that day, there was also Theo Walcott returning to Southampton on loan from Everton. Nearly 15 years after bright-eyed and full of promise, he left St Mary's for Arsenal. What do you make of this? Is this a bit like the Aldi version of Gareth Bale going back to Spurs?
Well, I mean, imagine if Gareth Bale had gone back to Southampton. I mean, wow. That would be some window. But yeah, Walcott's still only 31. I mean, I was surprised to read the reporting of that story that he was still Everton's highest earning player. You know, even amid the kind of array of players that have been brought in, particularly this window and others. But, you know, I think still has something to give, certainly for a team that has Southampton's ambitions. So I don't know. I quite like these restorative, person goes home, so to speak, stories.
But the welcome video, it's actually quite poignant. I mean, there's a kind of proud and triumphant note at the end, but mostly it's quite poignant with scenes of him scoring youngest ever goal scorer, etc. And there's a little bit of piano in the background, and as I say, it just gives that slight sense of, I don't know, the same kind of sadness you get from cleaning out an attic and finding an old school prize and thinking about all the promise you had that just evaporated over the years, and there you are now staring at old cardboard boxes. A little bit of that. Is it just me?
No, I think that's it. I think with Walcott, you look back at the way you might look back on an old, you know, a performance in a school play or something, and think, what if I'd kept that up? What if those encouraging words?
Who did you play, Dion?
Well, I never made it for my biggest role was the clown in Othello, which was pretty, you know, I hammed it up, but it didn't really go anywhere, and I felt, you know, I'd been overlooked for the big roles. And I tried to make an impact from the sidelines, but it didn't really go anywhere.
Now we're all retraining, Dion. You can very much take to the boards again.
I can. I picked a bad time to pick up acting again, but it does feel like that. It's very hard to look back on, you know, and what happened with Walcott beyond his career. You know, that the selection for the World Cup in 2006 is probably the one thing that just changed the perception and expectation around Walcott. And obviously that came after he moved from Southampton, but it became something he had to kind of carry around and live with. And it was a really unfair and impossible expectation. And kind of one of those examples of a Sven Goran Eriksson decision that really didn't make much sense.
Mm-hmm. James says he's got a lot to offer Southampton. Daniel, what do you think?
I mean, the big question is obviously kind of how he fits in with Southampton. It's whether he fits in with Ralf Hasenhüttl, because he plays these kind of tucked in wingers that ostensibly are pressers in Redmond and Stuart Armstrong. And he probably did need another one of those. Whether Walcott at 31, I mean, that's never really been his game. He's always been an out and out, go down the side of the pitch winger rather than a presser and a dip in field and wait for the knockdowns from Danny Ings kind of wide player. So I don't really know how that fits. I guess he's an impact sub. And if they want to change the game, that's what he does. And it makes sense for him, because he's certainly higher at the pecking order at Southampton than he was at Everton after the business they've done this summer.
Absolutely. Well, I should say, I may have come across a little bit negative there, but this is a footballer on his day is, I mean, as Lionel Messi once said, among the most dangerous you could face, and he's
still going to be.
Yeah, he did. But this was a quote that I saw this week.
This like when Buffon said Joe Hart was one of the best goalkeepers in the world, although
Pelé, Nicky Butt, all
that.
This stuff. Yeah. So, but the point I was going to make was that Theo, best luck to him because apparently a very nice guy, and he's playing at a Premier League club, so he's still very much in the top kind of 0.0001% of footballers. So, not to suggest that he's, you know, things aren't going well for him. So, anyway, I'll move on then because internationals, we're going to talk about them next.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power and part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
All right then, it's a packed season for clubs and you can't see the wisdom of adding in another set of international fixtures. How about two sets of international fixtures? That work better for you? So it is, for alongside the Nations League games this week, we've got the start of the European Championship qualifiers. 16 teams involved. Among them, Ireland, Northern Ireland and Scotland are all facing one-off matches. So Scotland will be taking on Israel, Ireland with Slovakia and Northern Ireland against Bosnia-Herzegovina. Win those games and then they'll have another one-off match in November, the winner of which gets one of the four playoff places at next summer's Euro 2020. Intriguingly, Dion, if Ireland and Northern Ireland win their games, they'll be facing each other in that second do-or-die match. Wow.
Yeah, it's it's quite a prize in some ways. Although obviously qualification itself is the goal, and you know these European Championships were especially important for Ireland when it looked like, and it still officially looks like they will, you know, a number of the games will be played in Ireland initially at Euro 2020, and now at Euro 2021. But I think the longer it goes on, the less likely a European Championship set in, you know, a multi-city European Championship does look unlikely, even in the summer of next year. But still, qualifying for it is hugely important for both countries. But it's very significant for Ireland's new manager Stephen Kenny as well, because he is taking over. He was supposed to take over after the European Championships. There was a lot of debate. You know, it was one of the last big decisions of the now disgraced former CEO of the FAI, John Delaney, to appoint Mick McCarthy, and then appoint Stephen Kenny to succeed him after the Euros. And in typical Ireland, a bit like English international team, they swing from, you know, there's massive mood swings. So when this appointment was made, one of the initial objections to this succession plan was, what if Ireland win the European Championships under Mick McCarthy? This was the great fear that Ireland would win the European Championships and then have to hand over to a non-European Championship winning manager. It quickly became apparent that that was not something we really needed to fear. Then because Ireland, you know, stumbled into the playoffs with a series of pretty disappointing performances, and then obviously because of the pandemic, it was decided to allow Kenny to come in, and Mick McCarthy stepped away. So he's now, in very early on in his reign, after two Nations League games, he is now facing a hugely important playoff.
Did you get to listen to the house track with Mick McCarthy vocals recently?
Yeah.
That is so good.
I've not heard that. Let's hear it now.
So it's not about one individual, it's about the whole team. It's got to be.
That's extraordinary, Dion. Is that a big hit in Ireland?
It came too late, unfortunately, to save Mick McCarthy's Ireland career.
Right.
Perhaps if it had been released 6 months ago, it might have might have tilted things. You know, the European Championships weren't going to be won or were unlikely to be won, but he had a good house track, and you know, he does lend himself to various memes, and you know, there is the careless whisper meme as well.
That
McCarthy has a healthy healthy catalogue of viral internet hits. It's just unfortunate that the actual football he produces tends to be more underwhelming.
Right, the footballing record. That careless whisper sounds intriguing, but I fear there's not time to go down that rabbit hole just now. Perhaps afterwards.
In a Nations League break, if there isn't time now, well, there's never going to be time.
There's major talking points today, James, and listener. I know there's a new book out about the whole John Delaney era with Ireland. Champagne football, is it, Dion?
That's it, yeah. It's by the two journalists who... it's an extraordinary story. There was a number of episodes involving John Delaney during his time as CEO, but he always managed to sort of survive, and he was an astute politician. He worked the kind of media at a certain level. He worked politicians. You know, he had a lot of network and a lot of connections, and he had the full backing of the FAI board critically. But last year, the Sunday Times and a journalist called Mark Tye reported that there had been a €100,000 loan from John Delaney to the FAI and then repaid by the FAI to John Delaney, which was used to cover some financial gaps in their accounts and needed to keep the show on the road. And from that story, which John Delaney attempted to get a high court injunction to prevent appearing, and he lost that injunction on a Saturday night, and the paper and the story appeared the following Sunday, a house of cards tumbled down. And it came out that despite this massive salary, John Delaney was on €360,000 a year at the end of his time as manager. The FAI were paying his rent. He had personal expenditure on the credit cards of, probably about €700,000 over a number of years. There is an unexplained payment to an ex-girlfriend of John Delaney's from an FAI account. Various things like this that all came out in this book, Champagne Football, and has led to a kind of a bloodletting and a kind of trying to rebuild the FAI. The FAI have got government money to rebuild. Their finances are in a huge state, even pre-COVID. And it has led to this, you know, Stephen Kenny's appointment, as I said, it was one of the last acts of John Delaney's time, but he would have been seen as somebody, because he comes from the League of Ireland, he would have been seen as somebody slightly who was outside the John Delaney sphere of influence. Delaney seemed usually favoured managers from the UK who may not be as aware of how he managed things in Ireland. But it has led to, you know, it's a best-selling book in Ireland. It's an extraordinary story. They have, you know, from that story that came out, more people came forward and gave them more information. And it just led to this situation where Delaney ended up leaving the FAI. And now the FAI is trying to rebuild. And yet even that is something that is going to be more difficult, because there are always issues with Irish football. The FAI pre-John Delaney, or maybe at one point, were described by an Irish journalist, Declan Lynch, as the FAI is the dysfunctional organisation that other dysfunctional organisations called the Galacticos. And they've never really managed to rid themselves of that. But this is a kind of a new era with Stephen Kenny, who is a different type of manager. He's promising to play a different type of football as well. And he's tried to do that in his first couple of matches. And that's going to be an interesting aspect of what happens over the next year or two, because he is planning to kind of change how Ireland approaches games. Like, he's even saying about this game, we're not trying to nick it with a set piece, we're not trying to do these things that, you know, Ireland only ever score through set pieces. So to actually eliminate that from your game plan is quite a drastic move, but it's part of his approach, which was evidenced at Dundalk, where he had a side that played a lot of football. And it's going to be something that's going to be an interesting aspect of his time as manager.
How will he get on?
Will he ever have a deep house track inspired by his press conferences? You know?
Exactly. Magnificent. Well, Slovakia is where it begins. Possibly it'll then see Northern Ireland on the road to Euro 2020. Northern Ireland, who are also under new management, Ian Barraclough, who's taken over from the under-21s after Michael O'Neill went to Stoke. So far, he's had a 1-1 draw in Romania and then a 5-1 defeat at home to Norway, powered by Erling Haaland. Norway, who may be the adversary for Scotland if they get past Israel at Hampden Park. Big blow for the Scots ahead of this game is the fact that Stuart Armstrong, Kieran Tierney and Ryan Christie will all be out after Armstrong tested positive for COVID-19. Tierney and Christie are now self-isolating. It does bring us back to this topic, which we discussed rather on Tuesday, about the extraordinary notion of, just leaving aside the issue of clubs already facing a very, very overstretched calendar, but also in the middle of a pandemic, taking players from different clubs and different leagues and making them fly to other countries and then mixing them all together and seeing what emerges. Chris Williams says, what is the point of these nation league games in the era of COVID?
Well, forgive me if you already discussed this earlier in the week, but Andriy Shevchenko at Ukraine had quite the unprecedented situation ahead of the friendly that he had against France, which ended in a 7-1 defeat. One of the reasons for that was because all three of his goalkeepers, Pyatov, Lunin and Pankiv, all tested positive for COVID-19, to the extent that he had to then call up his 45-year-old goalkeeping coach, Oleksandr Shokovsky, to be on the bench for that game. So clearly that's going to have repercussions for their upcoming qualifiers during this break. It's far from ideal, and it completely just distorts the integrity of the competition when you are unable to basically field not even your first choice goalkeeper, but your second and third choice as well. So, bonkers times we live in.
They're facing Spain and Germany, so Ukraine. So, yeah,
good luck. Dion.
No, I think it seems to be one of those slightly headless decisions to get games played at a time when it is, you know, the consequences of this could be kind of far reaching and last a long time, because as you say, players traveling all across Europe, then returning to clubs, how the infection travels from there, as we know, it's so transmissible that there could be long-term consequences for this. And I think it would have been far better to limit the matches to games that you really felt had to be played, that were necessary to be played, and the European Championship playoffs are clearly need to be played. Do the Nations League games need to be played? I'm not so sure. And Ireland are benefiting from this at the moment too, because Slovakia have lost a couple of players because of positive COVID tests as well.
Scotland haven't been to a senior tournament since 1998. They are two matches away from making the Euros. They have faced Israel multiple times in recent years. They keep getting drawn together in the Nations League. They also met a month ago. They had a 1-1 draw at Hampden Park. Still, a worrying prospect, Daniel.
Yeah, I mean, that game against Israel in September, they started a back three of Kieran Tierney, Scott McKenna, who has since moved from Aberdeen to Forest, and Scott McTominay. And Scott McKenna is injured, Kieran Tierney is out with COVID, and Scott McTominay is a central midfielder. So they've got huge problems finding enough defenders. Scotland's problem has always been scoring goals, really, but they've got massive issues at both ends of the pitch. And this is seen as a huge game because there will be no shame if they lose to Norway or Serbia, and they're expected to do so. But it will be seen as a massive opportunity missed if they were to fall behind Israel, because they actually were pretty good in qualifying Scotland. They finished third in a group that you would expect them to finish third in. And yeah, Israel were not great in their qualifying. I think Israel have only beaten Latvia in the last 18 months. They've beaten them twice, but it's the only country they've beaten. So yeah, big pressure on Scotland.
Well, England, so far, the only players out of their squad are Tammy Abraham, Jadon Sancho and Ben Chilwell. And that's because they didn't respect protocols. We'll be touching on England and why they aren't world champions yet, and also a very special anniversary next.
We know everyone thinks this season is going to be different, but at Paddy Power, we're staying positive, because isn't the new normal just the same old football? Avoid unnecessary journeys. That's Fulham's trip to Anfield off. Self-isolate? Some strikers do that very effectively already. You see? New normal, same old football. And that's why if one leg of your 4-plus-fold Acca lets you down, you get your money back as a free bet on all football matches and all markets. The Acca Cracker from Paddy Power.
Max free bet £10. Min odds 1 to 5 on each leg. Online exclusive. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18plusbegambleaware.org.
Listeners, we want to tell you about Scoot, the new lift-sharing app for friends who love football. Scoot connects teammates who drive with teammates looking for a lift, So whether that's a trip to training, a five-a-side kickabout in the park, or a visit to the pub to watch Super Sunday, Scoot auto-calculates the costs, splits the fares, and collects the money via the app so there's no haggling or chasing cash. Scoot is also 80% cheaper than ride hailing or taxis, and especially these days, isn't it nicer to share a car with no more than five of your mates than get on a bus with strangers? Download Scoot today on Android or iPhone and get £15 worth of free rides and drives as soon as you install it. Even better, if you send an email to help@scootride.com saying The Athletic sent you, you'll get an additional £5 after your first drive or ride. Go on, get your boots out of the boot with Scoot, the Totally Football Shows and The Athletic. That's Scoot, S-K-O-O-T, the new lift sharing app for friends who love football. On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
England-Wales is Thursday evening. It's a friendly ahead of Nations League fixtures against Belgium, number one ranked in the world right now, and Denmark. What do you make, Daniel, of the squad?
Well, there is competition for places, but that competition for places has been dented somewhat by the three players you name and the fact that, Mason Greenwood and Phil Foden aren't involved after their late night antics, shall we say, in the last international break. Southgate is desperate to try and instill this sense of discipline in the squad, which is entirely appropriate, particularly when it comes to, COVID-19 regulations. Footballers are often talked as overtalked as role models, but at the moment it makes sense for them professionally and, you know, in terms of setting the right example, not to break those conditions. And it's very easy for them not to break them, and they have broken them. I mean, the Wales game is effectively, I think, going to be B team against B team. But Southgate has got some questions to answer in this break, because he needs to sort out whether he's going to play a back four or a back five. He needs to wean himself off this over-reliance on multiple defensive midfielders, because I think we enjoyed our rise through attacking football, and he has some great young attacking players. And it's a great chance to see people like Dominic Calvert-Lewin in an England shirt, and Jack Grealish and Harvey Barnes and Connor Cody and Bukayo Saka, all of which might well start against Wales.
Maybe Dean Henderson as well. Gareth Southgate making it pretty clear that Jordan Pickford's going to be sitting this one out. Dominic Calvert-Lewin getting his first call up to the senior squad. Premier League top scorer, of course, currently. But he's previously been a star for England, not least at the Under-20 World Cup in South Korea, when Calvert-Lewin, one of the stars for England, scored the winner in the final against Venezuela, as England became world champions, picking up their first world trophy in 51 years.
Lewis Cook with the delivery, looking for Calvert-Lewin. Calvert-Lewin has a chance, and another one, and he's taken the second one, and England have taken the lead. Everton's Dominic Calvert-Lewin with a goal that maybe just puts England on the way to becoming world champions at this level.
Extraordinary times, those, back in 2017. That World Championship trophy went with victory at the Under-20 Toulon tournament, victory at the Under-17 World Cup as well, victory at the Under-19 Euros, all in this same year, reaching the last four in the Under-21 Euros, beaten by Germany there on penalties, respecting the brand, and runners-up as well at the Under-17 Euros. So, I mean, we were basically, in 2017, we were like Spain or something. At the time, it felt like only a matter of weeks or possibly months until the senior side would, by a process of osmosis, go and dominate world football. Is that still on? When's it going to happen?
Well, I mean, the 2017 was viewed as this huge success, because it was seen as the first proof of this new generation of English coaching, in whereby players would be brought through on or would be taught technical skills more than anything else, which was seen as a shift from previous generations, and also in the training of our coaches, which other European countries did and probably still do far better than England. The reality is that there are two problems. One was how you create that talent, which we've moved to solve, I think. And the other is how you create pathways for that young talent to get into first teams, because evidence says that the years between 18 and 21 are when a player getting regular competitive football matters a huge amount. And, you know, without straying off topic too much, we've seen the B team argument rear its, in my opinion, ugly head in the last few days again. But there is a problem with these biggest clubs stockpiling young players that don't get the competitive football they need.
Only four of that 2017 World Championship winning side have actually received caps with the senior team. They've made one appearance each. Tomori, Lewis Cook, Maitland-Niles and Dominic Solanke. But, you know, whether because issues of space or just not quite living up to expectations, nobody really has quite matched those early expectations. Is that fair? Calvert-Lewin, I guess, would be the exception. Or maybe Tomori?
Yeah, the under-20s is a slightly, without, you know, putting down their achievements in 2017, it's a slightly odd age group in that we clearly have under-19s and 21s at that level, and the 21s is the flagship underage group. And there are players at under-20 level who, even at that time, are knocking on the door of the national team. That wasn't really the case with the under-20 squad because we had the different tournaments that summer. But... yeah, I mean, I actually think if Calvert-Lewin plays and we have five progressing from under 20 to senior level in that period of time, that's a pretty good return. I mean, I know the players we've listed and, you know, none of them are established in that England squad, but that's a pretty good return. And yeah, the next step is making that pathway the natural step rather than the exception, which it has been in recent years.
Mm. And of course, we've got the ones from the under-17 world champions from that same year who were also knocking on the door, the likes of Jadon Sancho and Phil Foden. What a vintage set of players that is.
Yeah, and very quickly, that under-17 age group was seen as the flagship England age group. That's the one they were most excited about at the time.
OK. Are you excited about these two Nations League fixtures and, of course, the game with Wales, Daniel?
I would be excited about them if they didn't have all the caveats that we've discussed about COVID and about the over-fatigue of players. I will watch them, but it's difficult to believe that even the players are taking it 100% seriously, so it's very hard for fans to do that.
I see. Well, it all begins tonight at Wembley. Perhaps the biggest talking point about that fixture against Wales is the fact that it'll be 20 years on, almost to the day, from one of the Three Lions' most famous nights at Wembley. The occasion... the final England game played at that stadium, the night that their manager Kevin Keegan resigned in the toilet after a 1-0 defeat to Germany. How can you just walk away from me when all I can do is watch you leave? A little bit of Mariah Carey and Westlife, which was the nation's number one that fateful day, and so chillingly appropriate. It's almost like they knew. Kevin, having reached his decision in a toilet cubicle, emerging then flushed to brief the press. He said he'd had a longer run than expected, but he didn't reveal if he was taking his number two with him. Memories?
Yeah, I feel for Keegan a bit. I mean, he wasn't good enough to be England manager. There were a dearth of other options. He wasn't tactically deep enough. He allowed pressure to get to him, as we saw famously a few years before with Ferguson. But I feel a bit for him because he's become this kind of tragicomic character in English football. You know, he was a Ballon d'Or winner. He was an excellent manager at Newcastle. He finished second in the Premier League, which very few England managers have done. I think, is it maybe Ron Atkinson's maybe the only other one? So I feel a bit for him, but he did have this tendency to, when he had these meltdowns, he tended to do it very near or on television cameras.
I think the fans today, when we're coming off, you know, they sort of made me realise that not only did they put me in the job, but with what they were saying when I was coming off, I think they feel it's time for me to go. And that's where the power should be.
That was his downfall. And he never really recovered from that, we should say.
Yeah. I mean, did England? Bex apparently was in tears, according to David Davis's book later on. Tony Adams was begging Kevin to reconsider. Didi Harmon, meanwhile, in the Germany dressing room, when he found out it was his goal that had sealed Keegan's fate, he said he regretted it because he was such a massive fan of Keegan's Hamburg growing up.
A shame. And also, anyone who's read Raphael Honigstein's book, Das Reboot, will know that this Germany side was not a good Germany side. This right. was essentially when they decided that they had to push the button and completely kind of rethink what they were doing, because they could only beat England 1-0 at Wembley in the final game with a long-distance goal from Didi Harmon. So, yeah, again, that doesn't cast that period in a particularly good light either.
Mm. It was the great period as well. Probably started that real swing from one type of manager to another as well. Keegan was the great antidote to Glenn Hoddle, of course, like, because that was, Hoddle, ultimately, and I suppose, uniquely for an international manager, was ultimately sacked for his views on the transmigration of souls. But before that, he was said to lack something in sort of, relating to players, and famously, said to Beckham, maybe you're not skillful enough to do that particular skill, that kind of thing. And Keegan then came in as the opposite to that, as the manager who would give players great belief. But as Daniel says, like, there was that flaw in that belief, that it was so much governed by emotion that there was always a downside to it with Keegan.
Mm. Well, 20 years on, neither that toilet cubicle nor the stadium itself is there anymore, but there's a new Wembley and a new England as well. And emotions will be running high as they stroll out against Wales. Keen for more international talk? Well, there have been some cracking matches played last night on the continent, and we'll be talking about those and picking out one or two of the others to keep an eye out for in the days to come, very shortly. First of all, though, let's hear what Lee Price is up to with Paddy Power.
Season's greetings, listeners. Happy international break. And inspired by England, I'm having a bit of a surprise party. I know, lovely. It was organised by me and attended by just me. You could say it's my first Totally Football Show live show, but I haven't been invited to those yet. At least it complies with government guidelines, so that's good. Anyway, the numbers. I've gone to paddypower.com/football and I've clicked popular tournaments. Seems a good place to start. Weirdly, the Nations League has come up, but that could be fortuitous for this segment because I've been ordered to read out numbers relating to the Big Five this weekend. No, that's not the USA or China, etc., but France, Italy, Spain, England and Germany. Poor old Holland. Now, they're all favourites to win this weekend, except England, obviously, because they play the big one, Belgium. England are 17-10 to win that game and get sweet revenge for the third, fourth playoff in Russia. Remember that? No? Anyway, Belgium there are slight favourites at 6-4. Elsewhere, Spain, Germany and Italy are all odds on to win their games, while France are 21-20 favourites against Portugal. All of the so-called Big Five to win this weekend is 18-1. Without England, you could be well advised, it's 6-1. Stay safe.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. Ahead of the Nations League and European qualifying matches, a series of friendlies played on Wednesday featuring Turkey holding Germany to a 3-3 draw. Mexico getting Frank de Boer's reign as Netherlands manager off to a bad start, with a 1-0 victory for the Mexicans. What else happened? Italy with the rule of six over Moldova. Portugal-Spain ending 0-0, and a whopping result for the French against Ukraine. Yikes. Did you see this?
Goalkeeperless Ukraine.
Yeah.
Goalkeeperless Ukraine, yeah.
I did see it, and it was notable, if for nothing else really, than Olivier Giroud drawing level with Michel Platini for international goals. And I think it was a tweet, I think it was an Arsenal blogger called Tim Stillman who said Giroud now feels like the perfect candidate to be the first freelance footballer, in that he's signed by a club, immediately does very well, and then they persuade themselves they can do better and possibly can do better. But he is so wasted at Chelsea now because he was brilliant against Ukraine. He's brilliant for France every time. He had such a hand in them winning the World Cup. And yeah, it feels a bit of a shame, almost like with Milik at Poland, that he's probably only really going to play at international level mainly for the next 2 years, which is a huge shame because he's got a lot to give.
The incredible thing about Giroud as well is that this was, what, his 100th cap. He's only 9 goals away from being all-time top scorer for France with Thierry Henry, which, given they've just put 7 past Ukraine, he'll probably do that, by November? So that's not going to be an issue. And then Camavinga scored on his debut and became, what, the youngest player to score for France in a century.
Avec la tête d'Olivier Giroud et Camavinga!
What a goal it was as well. I mean, described as a bicycle kick, but I think that's slightly reductive. But the ball, it's a Giroud header which comes back off a defender, and rather than do the whole leap, he basically just flicks it back over his shoulder into the far corner. It's magnificent for a player who's A, only 17 still, and B, essentially came into the Rennes first team as a defensive midfielder. He's insanely good, Camavinga.
Yeah, I mean, that finish just shows how kind of intelligent and alert he is. Just to be able to have the presence of mind to come up with that solution in that situation, I think was kind of really indicative of why everyone's so excited to see him. And of course, we'll get to see him in the Champions League this year because Rennes have qualified. They're in Chelsea's group. Yeah, no, definitely. For a 17-year-old who already feels like he's been around for a couple of years, it's all the more impressive for that.
Okay, next up, your next chance to see France in action will be Sunday night when they'll be facing Portugal in a game which pits the World Champions, of course, against the European Champions and Nations League holders. What other games are you guys looking out for? Perhaps Germany, to see if they can win a Nations League game for the first time?
Well, that was extraordinary last night where, you know, they got in front three times and just conceded. Turkey's equaliser coming in the 93rd minute. It wasn't even a full-strength Turkey side either. And just the mistakes that Germany kept making at the back. I think the second goal, there was reason to feel a little bit aggrieved that a foul should have been called. Exactly, just kind of trying to build up play from their defence and getting caught in possession and then all of a sudden being very exposed was a problem for them, as it has been in the Nations League as a whole.
Six matches so far, they've yet to win any of them at Germany. Italy, meanwhile, on Wednesday night, warming up for their clash with Poland on Sunday with a 6-0 victory over Moldova. This was very much a reserve Italy team, but lots of good news from it for Roberto Mancini, James.
Yeah, I mean, 6-0 against Moldova, you kind of expect that scoreline from, one of the traditional heavyweights. But to be honest, there were times when Italy, when they'd play against a Luxembourg or an Andorra, where they'd only score three goals rather than the six or seven that a Spain or Germany would score. And this has been happening on a regular basis under Roberto Mancini. I think one of the interesting things about this is what, 17 games unbeaten now. The last two games have been really impressive. And you mentioned this kind of experimental scratch team that they put together. Incorporated some of the players who'd done really well in Amsterdam against Holland in the last international break, but had a real Sassuolo flavour to it in that you had Berardi scoring, Ciccio Caputo scoring, who's 33. And, you know, he's a much more elegant and technical player compared with Dario Hubner. But in some respects, there are elements of the Hubner in Caputo in that, you know, he brews his own beer, whereas Hubner liked his grappa. And basically, they've come to Serie A very, very late. So to see him get his first international goal was good. And yeah, generally, going into these two games against Poland and Holland as well, still a lot of positive vibes, as they say, in 2020, James.
Brilliant. Does anybody else have any international fixtures they're looking out for that they made a special note to tune in for over the next few days?
Well, tonight we've got the Qatar 2022 World Cup qualifiers kicking off in South America.
Yes.
But there isn't, I'd say, apart from, was it Chile against Uruguay, I think. Uruguay against Chile. Right. The others are just, you know. Yeah.
No, okay. Well, there's that.
Norway, Serbia, the other one in the Scotland playoff system. James briefly mentioned it before, but Norway they kind of feel like the new kids on the block in terms of, we know they have Erling Haaland, but they've got Petter Haugge, who's obviously just been signed by Milan. They've got Sander Berg, who's at Sheffield United. Sort of basically a quarter of the squad is aged 24 or under, and they kind of feel like they're going places.
Martin Ødegaard as well?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, now back at Real. It's an interesting squad. It has, you know, Ødegaard in age order next to Coventry City's defender Leo Østergaard. It feels like a really kind of mixed, I think there's 12 European countries represented in the squad, but it does feel young and it feels like it's going places.
Mm.
And the Sorloth shotgun as well.
Yes.
Who, you know, has really, really bounced back from his Palace days. had a great year at Trabzon last year and is now at RB Leipzig, where he's kind of replaced Timo Werner. Yet to get on the score sheet for Leipzig, but yeah, after what, 20, bloody hell, he scored a hell of a lot of goals last year. More than, what, close to 35 goals in all competitions for Trabzon. So, yeah, that partnership with Haaland means Josh King, who may yet get a move at the moment, can't get into the first team at the moment.
Remarkable. That clash with Serbia coming up 7:45 on Thursday night, so maybe too late for you, listener, by the time you hear this. But if they get through that, early November is when the decisive games for those European Championship places will be, well, decided. Right, anyway, that's it for today's Totally Football Show. Dion, it's been lovely having you with us.
Great to be here. Thanks, James.
Not at all. We look forward to welcoming you back soon if you'll join us again. James Horncastle, lovely to see you too, and Daniel Story. And listener, thanks for being with us. We are here on Monday. I hope you'll be joining us too as we round up the big talking points from the weekend's action and look forward to whatever next week holds. Have yourselves a great weekend in the meanwhile. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
Muddy Knees Media.